Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I have one question and one question only, Jules Gill. Have you heard the new ABBA singles?
Wait, what? There are many, many things that I think that you would open the podcast with. Usually just a bit of preamble about who we are and what we're doing here. But you're asking me
about... They all know that.
The ABBA singles, as in the band ABBA.
Waterloo, SOS, they've got new singles, mate. They've got new songs. There's two new ABBA songs.
I didn't even know that they were still alive.
I don't think most of the world did either. But they are, they're still alive. They've got new music. They're doing a return gig. They're doing a hologram gig where they'll be performing They'll be performing backstage and the younger versions of themselves will dance across the screen. Don't worry about it. They've got it all figured out.
No, they don't have it all figured out because that is something that should be laid to rest. As much as I love Waterloo, man, that's absolutely fine. But I don't think that needs to be a thing. Like,
it does.
Right off into the sunset.
Oh, God. You need to get the new songs on. They do a piano sweep in it where it goes, and it's like, that's beautiful.
That's not a piano sweep. You've never heard a piano if you think that a...
Beautiful. Beautiful times.
That's a sad trombone.
Whatever it is, I'm loving it. ABBA in 2021 in the year of our Lord. But also, this is the Untitled Banter podcast. I should have said that at the beginning, but we'll just carry on. It's a gaming podcast for the most part. We delve into whatever else is going on. I'm Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Hello, everyone.
Recovering from the onslaught of information that I give him. Also, there's a new Iron Maiden album out today. Just
I have given a listen. I thought
it's a good time.
It's a solid okay from me. I enjoy it. I was hoping that that the songs would be more in line with the writing on the wall, that sort of like bluesy,
rocky feel.
And then it's just like every other song is just like standard Maiden. I was like,
a bit.
Okay, fair enough.
I think it's better than Book of Souls, not to make this a music podcast. I prefer it to Book of Souls. I don't think it's as good as Final Frontier. But if you're an Iron Maiden fan, it's a nice return to form if you couldn't get away with Book of Souls. But anyway, I said.
They still got the gumption.
They still got it. There's a new AC/DC album last year. ABBA is back and Iron Maiden are back. It's 1986 all over again.
I was about to say, what year are we living in?
I don't even really know. But anyway, the Untitled Banter podcast, we ask people what they would like us to talk about, different questions, different talking points, and we get to as many as we can. First question from John Wood. What are your thoughts on famous actors in games? I hate it. It really ruins the immersion for me. Death Stranding, Keanu in Cyberpunk. The only one that worked for me is Kevin Spacey in Call of Duty, which is obviously a massive lol considering the way that went. But then in the replies, we had McAllister NYC saying that, let's be honest, Conan had no business being in Death Stranding. Yeah, what do you think of this stuff?
This is the weird thing, is that I actually thought that Norman Reedus was one of the shining exemplars of like a video game celebrity cameo, as it were, done incredibly well. I thought that, I don't know if personally that role could have been fulfilled in equal measure by anyone else, but knowing he was tied so heavily with the project, I really did feel like it was a nice sense of weight and connection. Like, I think when you have celebrity cameos or celebrities in video games, having that sort of gravitas and weight of real life people in a video game can actually lend a lot of strength to your story, as well as emotional resonance as well, because you go, I know that person in real life, therefore I feel a lot more because I know that that's a tangible person.
Getting when they got Spacey in Advanced Warfare, that was solid because he was just coming off of his House of Cards performance. So it was like,
And he was the exact same character.
And I thought that worked well in Advanced Warfare. I don't mind it. I think that it can be distracting. It depends how much of an archetype they have established. Like, if you're casting them just to be another role, but in your video game. I really like Keanu as Johnny Silverhand in Cyberpunk. I feel like that's quite a definitive performance. Like, he's made that character him.
And it was a surprise one as well. Like, nobody knew that he was attached to the project until he suddenly came out and everyone was like, hang on,
not even CDPR until 2016 when he strolled through the door.
And then he's like, hey, I'm in the game. I'm a main part of it. And
time to change it all.
I enjoyed that a lot. And there's a few sort of celebrity cameos or appearances in video games that I do absolutely rate, like all of Brutal Legends, Rock Legends they managed to get in there. Like Ozzy Osbourne, they got Lemmy involved in that as well. They've got
Rob Halford.
Yeah, you got Rob Halford in there. Like that fit the tone of the game really well, and I really enjoyed it. So it can work out really well. But sometimes, as is in the case of Sonya Blade being voiced by Ronda Rousey, that was one of the worst voice acting gigs that I've ever heard. Like, you can imagine them in the studio just kind of like, now, Ronda, that was great and all what you said there, but try not reading it like you're reading it off the back of a cereal box and actually put some emotion into it. She's like, emotion? What's that? I don't understand that.
As if you haven't just learned English that morning. I mean, I'm being too harsh. I'm not a professional voice actor, but it was very noticeable.
If I was in the VO booth, right, I would just like put down, you know, a little like button they have to communicate with the people inside the booth. They'd like Clem Fandango style. I'd be like, now, Rhonda, I just have one question here. And I am barring the doors because I am genuinely afraid of you. Are you an alien? Do you understand how human emotion works? Can you move your mouth? Concept of what our lexicon is? Like, because you are just saying words here and putting intonations in that even Shatner's saying is a bit too much.
Oh, God. Because I like Ronda Rousey until she went off the deep end. She was kind of in terms of like a martial artist. And I thought that that record-breaking win that she had in 15 seconds was cool. Mm-hmm. And she was fine in Fast and the Furious. So when she got signed for Mortal Kombat and then she started talking as Sonya, I was like, that's cool. That's Ronda Rousey's voice. But then
we are not hearing you speak. Like,
yeah, exactly. It wasn't one of the best. I think it depends how distracting it is and how much, like I said, how much they actually bring to the table as opposed to, oh my God, guys, look, we got such and such. And then what do you actually do with that? Because it's weird in Death Stranding, like you said, you really liked Sam Bridges played by Norman Reedus. It's weird now because I feel like Norman Reedus has commented a few times on the reality of the way that stuff was filmed. And he was just like, I didn't really know what was going on. I walked over there for a bit and I picked something up and I did something else and that was it. And then now it's this whole thing. And so he doesn't really know what it is. And so, like, looking at the director's cut, where now he's racing cars and he's like doing little dances, and it's like Norman Reedus has nothing to do with what his model is actually being done. Yeah. Like, God only knows what the coders have done.
So, in actuality, of the two between Conan O'Brien and Norman Reedus, Conan O'Brien actually had more understanding of his role within the thing because he at least had his dialogue and was told by Hideo Kojima, this is the character you are playing. Yeah. Whereas Norman Reedus is basically just that, like, I've got my face plastered and everything.
Well, I mean, Mads Mikkelsen, like, sort of famously said, like, around the time of the game coming out that he had no idea what it was about. And he was just sort of like, Hideo Kojima is a very pleasant man and I got on with him very well, but I have no idea what I'm doing or what I'm saying or what any of it is. And you can tell that when you watch it back, like, it's just a series of dialogue lines delivered in a certain order. That game is absolute insanity. I kind of love it, but it is insane. But
in a way, I can't wait for the director's cut, because it's like, it's one of those things where, like, roll a dice and consult a table of random elements and just be like, hey, look, we're adding this into the game. No one could have predicted that racing was going to be part of this.
I know. You think he's just got a big twister, Matt, where he's got sort of like racing games, fighting mini game, quick time event. He just sort of jumps on it, and then wherever he lands, he's just like, right, guys, we're doing this now.
Well, I recently said that Death Stranding is the equivalent of you know when people use the expression throw stuff at the wall and see what sticks?
Yes.
He threw stuff at the wall and just took the entire wall with him. Like, he was just like, everything's good.
Just staples it all to the wall. Carries it with him. Next question from Rex Wolfley. You've been given a single dose of truth serum. Who are you using it on, and what information are you hoping to get?
I'm using it on Peter Molyneux, and I'm asking him to basically just answer any question at all. Any question. Peter, how old are you? Well, time foretold that once an acorn sprouted, and on that tree that then grew, there were three rings, and the three rings said, Peter Molyneux doth be. And it's like, no, Peter, give me a simple, straightforward
answer. He just puts his hand out. He just expects a £50 note every now and then. He just needs paying.
Do you know what I'd ask him? I'd ask him, did you ever believe that Project Milo was ever going to work?
I was just going to say
you are a liar.
If anyone hasn't watched the Project Milo footage, because it's hilarious to think what we were like when we watched that and go, well, it could be that, because it was like, it was the original version of the Kinect, and it was this whole idea that a little boy was living inside your Xbox, and the gameplay demo that they showed, the tech demo or whatever, was this woman, I forget
Kate
what her name
Milo.
Was. Hey, okay. And she's talking to him, and it's all in real time, and it's so clearly fake now. But at the time, it was like, oh my God, maybe this is the future.
There's the bit where she like goes, hey, Milo, why don't you write down your thoughts on a piece of paper, and hands him the paper at the exact time the paper appears at the top screen. It's like, yeah. I'm sorry, the processing power of that is like, yeah, at the time would have been more than like MIT would have had.
The
like,
bit when there's a bit when he wants to go swimming or something, and he throws her a pair of goggles, and then she sort of like catches nothing in midair, and then it cuts back to Molyneux being like, did you realize that like actually he threw them and she instinctually knew to grab the goggles? And I'm like, because you told her, because it's fake.
Because she's a paid actress, and this is literally a recorded session.
God, the Molyneux era was a runaway train. I think mine would also be a game-related thing. I would just ask Jim Ryan what the living F Sony are doing right now. Like, there's the whole thing with Horizon's controversy. There's the whole thing with their lack of a plan for cross-gen stuff. There's the whole thing with them just not really seeming to know what a PlayStation 5 game is. I would love some clarification. Because compared to like how laser-focused Xbox is, I just look at everything Sony are doing and I'm just like, do you know why you brought a console out? Do you have any idea what you're actually doing with this? Because it's just so all over the place.
I'm just imagining them just sort of hands in their pockets, kicking rocks, and just some of the doing it.
Why
you gotta hassle me, Scott? Why you gotta hassle me? I just want to bring out a console, man.
Look, just like buy it if you want, right? But you know,
yeah, sure. I've got no games, and I can't. I get the components need to meet demand. But yeah, just leave me alone, Scott. Just leave me alone, mate.
It's whatever, mate. You know, I'm not one of those squares. You get your Game Pass. You get whatever you want. Leave me alone.
Go get an Xbox. Go get it. I don't even want you. I don't even want you here.
I think the whole thing with Sony's just been ridiculous. Next question from Nathan Paxton. Kotaku have really been putting out some incendiary articles lately, and it's rubbed many people the wrong way. What do you think is going on over there? What are your opinions on the site as a whole? Have you been keeping up with the state of Kotaku recently?
Fill me in, mate. What's going on? This
question will be because of they did an article called, if you're going to preview Far Cry 6, at least do it right. And they started calling out other, it was written by Ethan Gatch. And they started calling out, they started quoting other previews from IGN. I forget which other ones they included, but the thing is, the overall point they were making is valid. They wanted to make a point that you can't just cover another Far Cry game and just say it's more of the same Far Cry. You have to you have to delve into the political reality, the socio-political reality of the country that the thing is set in. You have to look at the way that war is portrayed. You have to look at the way the conflict is portrayed and look at the ethnicities that you're drawing from and the way you paint these people as villains. That is a whole massive conversation and a valid one.
Very big conversation.
And that's a great conversation to have. The reality of what came from them saying, look, if you're going to do this, do it right. Here's how you do it right. Was just people going, well, all that coverage is out there. Like if you go to XYZ website, here are smaller outlets who aren't IGN who are talking about that stuff. You just haven't done a wider sweep before doing your angry article.
It's also one of those things where like trying to take aim at sites like IGN for having very, let's just call it sugar-coated coverage for it.
Sometimes,
is to dive deeper into the entire nature of the gaming industry and paid for reviews, paid for previews, early access stuff. Like there is a reason why these certain huge outlets get treated like absolute like celebrities and royalty whenever they are presented with new games. It's because they want positive coverage, however and whatever it costs. So are you really surprised you're going to go over there and get a nice like candy coated, hey, Far Cry 6 is great, it's just big and really cool explosions and now there's a dog, can you pet the dog, ha 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 ha, sort of thing.
I think also there's a whole other side of it where at that stage in a game's life cycle everyone just wants it to be good, and I think that I think that's completely valid too. I think that you need to there was always that thing. I remember when Video Gamer used to be doing the rounds back when our own Simon Miller was at Video Gamer, and there was a whole conversation around getting to know your reviewer and getting to know what they're into. And then going, his example back then was that he loved Batman. And so he was like, look, if Batman comes out, and I remember when Arkham Knight came out, he was like, come to me because I'll tell you if it's a good Batman game.
Because
he knows that. And me, when I was younger, and I still mostly agree with this, I don't think you can put the impetus on the overall mainstream audience to build that relationship with individual reviewers, but I would suggest you do that. And I think that once you know what people's specialities are, then that'll line up with your own tastes. And it's a bigger investment, but it pays off.
I do find it quite difficult because it's like, we, for example, have an example of this, in that we are a small team of very passionate gamers, but we all have different likes and dislikes within the industry. For example, let's just say, for example, I'm a huge racing video game fan and you're not, but you get given the racing game in question. Let's just say you're not, though. And you get given the code for this brand new racing game. You will absolutely crap on that game because you don't like that genre. Yet if I was given that, I might sing its praises more so because of the fact that I love that genre. But it might also give me a better critical evaluation because I've played more games from that to sing its praises or detract from it. Mm. Now, the problem is that when our fans like log into our videos, they don't know who's presenting each video. They don't know who's covering which article or review. So sometimes our opinions are complete as our opinions as a company are completely wildly different because it's down to the individual, but we have to give a concurrent face of this is what Culture Gaming thinks about this video or topic.
I think also, but I think a mark of a good reviewer is also being able to separate subjectivity and objectivity. Literally saying, you know, this game mechanic is solid. These graphics, this rendering, this stuff is really, really solid. This objective measure has been achieved versus I personally, like for me, if I was talking about if there was a new Def Jam game, I'd be comparing it to the old ones and talk about how much I love that. But there has to be a way to separate those things. And I think that that's a whole other conversation on how reviews are done.
I wonder how you'd even go about doing that, whether or not you would say like, as in the example you gave earlier, if there is a new Batman game, then this guy and this guy will be the people who will be reviewing that. So go follow them on like Instagram, Twitter, whatever, and make sure that you keep up to date with their views and opinions, because they're going to be the only coverage of Batman that we have on this site is by these three people. But you can't do that necessarily in a huge ever-moving industry that has so many games coming out and stuff like that.
I think it's always case by case. It depends what's being reviewed. I think that someone like Ewan would be able to give a way more detailed why this is great for Batman fans style review, because he knows all the comics inside out and he knows that wider media. But I also think that there is a way to do a review for a mainstream audience that touches on the subjectivities and touches on the objectivities and gives a through line review, like, you know, overall, is this a quality product worth your time as an underscore to the whole thing.
I feel like if we look at the IGN review video format, they go through the classic motions of like, does it look good? Does it sound good? Does it do this sort of thing? They never really go into like deep dive territory with their reviews. And I'm just using them as an example.
They do as follow-ups, but they are very much going for that mainstream audience. And that's who they are, like, entirely.
Yeah. And the thing is that you have to get your review almost because of the nature of YouTube now and the length of videos being like, you know, people don't stay past like 3 minutes on most cases. People don't even stay past the first minute.
Is it good? Yes, no.
Yeah. And so in terms of like going back round to the article in question, calling out Far Cry 6 and having to look into the socio-political nature of those games, either you make a video where your review is entirely based around that and then you talk about the game, or you go down the review of, is the game actually good? I have to just do it on this because I need to get it out the door, and what is best for the views and stuff like that.
The thing that's really interesting with them is that like they are touching on, they're almost lining up with that. So because there is that mob of people who absolutely dog IGN when they, or someone like IGN when they do anything. IGN seems to get the worst of it. But there is that sort of thing of like, we're not the games media, you know, we are hardcore gamers and we're not going to go to IGN and F that. And we know what people really like and it's not this. And I think those conversations are all fascinating too. But Kotaku going down this route is almost them saying like, look, they're not doing it right, they're not reviewing stuff right, because they're just giving you the same copy paste style preview that you've had in this case five times before, and that's only the main installments. Stick with us, we've got, you know, we're gonna do the real stuff. And I feel like that's an interesting pivot when you're Kotaku. I think that that's a whole thing. And like their new editor-in-chief is Patricia Hernandez. She replaced Stephen Totillo earlier this year. And I feel like that whole shift, and I champion identity, and I champion them having a site identity. If they want to be big and boisterous and, you know, they want to like piss people off and do whatever, do it, man. Like, I'm game for that. Like, I mean, you're still free to comment on it as an audience. Like, that it makes for fascinating conversations. Like, and it means that they stand out from the likes of IGN. So I think that's what they're trying to do, is stand out.
Yeah. It becomes like a marketing tool for them. Like, if they can get people talking about it and irate enough about it, who at the end of the day, they've got publicity. All you're talking about is Kotaku. That's the
thing. Is like, there's obviously like limits to it because it's pure clickbait. Like, as soon as you see the title, oh, if you're going to review Far Cry 6, at least do it right or preview it.
You
have to click to see what Ethan Gack means, and he's getting a lot of traffic to that site. It's a fine line.
In this case, from what you've described, it's a very clever way of doing it. And I feel like it's very good to call out certain review outlets if they are just doing the copy paste format. It's just whether or not it can be backed up. Like, I hope for their sake that they don't just go piss everyone off, shake the hornet's nest, and then just go and their Far Cry 6 review mentions nothing of the things that they have just discussed and raised at this point.
It reminds me so much of, across the last few years, Forbes started doing a lot more game coverage, and you started seeing Eric Kane, I forget what you call the other dude, and they did really, really intelligently done, and this is not an insult at all, intelligently done clickbait, where they would get you in, because whatever the talking point of the time was, they would have this immaculately phrased title that would either go against whatever the talking point was, or they'd reinforce something, and obviously they fully believed it, and they were writing these pieces, and they were on Google all the time, and I remember going to Forbes's homepage, because I was like, Forbes doing game coverage, and they didn't have a gaming section on their homepage, but there is a knack to doing that, and I think a lot of people, especially in gaming, like those counterculture opinions, because they make for the best in-person water cooler conversations anyway. Yep. So I don't know, like, my overall thing is I absolutely see what they're doing. They've got a new editor-in-chief, so they're just, like you said, throwing everything at the wall kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I think it's fascinating, but it is very incendiary. It is very, gets people's backs up.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
But yeah, all this subject matter, I think, is fascinating.
Yeah. Cool. I mean, like, I'm going to actually go and read some of these articles now. I want to go and see where the progression is happening.
Because the other thing, not to spit it all the way out again, but the other thing is they did an article on the XCOM mobile game, and they called it SHIT, which became a whole thing of how dare you? How dare you say that? Because you've gone so far, you can't say that it's that. And I was like, if the dude thinks that it is, that writer thinks that it's literal SHIT, then call it that. Like, that's fine. Like, you always have to wait out.
It's one of those things where you've got like the classic Americanism of it's the freedom of speech. You can say whatever you want on the internet, but just don't be offended by people saying shut up because of the fact that you are allowed to say whatever you want, but it doesn't protect you from once you've said it, sort of thing. Like,
the final thing I'll say for Kotaku is that it's hilarious. If you go on their website, look at any of their incendiary articles, look at the URL, chances are they've changed it, because even that, the SHIT one that I mentioned, I'm only spelling it out because we're on a platform where you can't swear. They changed it to crap, or they changed it to doesn't look very good. And in the case of the Far Cry one, they've changed it to something else as well. So it's always kind of funny looking at what they initially went with and had to change. Yeah. But yes, overall, Kotaku making waves. Next question from Coach Marv. Being a little bit behind the curtain with a deeper knowledge of the industry, do you ever feel it hinders your ability to blindly enjoy or appreciate a game? Do you wish you could receive a game with a blissfully naive approach, or do you think you'd still react the same?
That's a tough one to answer, because sometimes looking inside the sausage factory isn't a pleasant experience, especially when you just want to be like, I remember a time when I just either bought games or just played games and I just judged them on their own merits. I didn't focus on the preamble lead. I didn't get swept up in the marketing. I didn't get all the follow-up stuff of the like so-and-so who was attached to this product is now like completely gone off the rails, and therefore we should all bin this actually decent game and stuff like that. It's just one of those things where like being out of the maelstrom in the eye of the hurricane where it's actually calm was quite pleasant. Mm-hmm. But it's the classic sense of ignorance is bliss. If you don't know where your food is coming from, if you don't know where your games are coming from, you don't know who's manufacturing, writing, creating, if you don't know if the strains and stresses that people are put under but in the industry to make these amazing titles, then yes, you can go and enjoy the game, but sometimes maybe we shouldn't. Maybe we should stand up for the people, the individuals who are making and suffering for our entertainment. And I do think that, yeah, it is actually quite essential to do your own research, as the quote would be.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is going to be the weirdest comparison, but I remember going to buy a phone from Phones for You, and I hadn't researched it. I just wanted a new phone. I just sat down and was like, I want a new phone. And the dude gave me this ring around rigmarole BS and tried to sell me two SIM cards and an extra phone and a separate contract plan. So I would be paying two for like half a year. And I had to like step in halfway through that and be like, I don't want any of this stuff. I just wanted a new phone. Yeah. And I remember literally committing for the rest of my life, I'm going to research everything that I'm going into. And I also think, to bring it back to video games, I think you get more out of it when you do know more about the technical aspects. Some things, even like a lighting engine, can seem way more impressive if you know the history of lighting engines or whatever it is. But like you said, there is that reality to not even thinking about the wider machinations of the industry and just going like, oh, cool, the new Assassin's Creed's out or whatever, and not having, and just being able to enjoy it. The one thing, because at some point I'm going to do a list on the downsides of working in the industry, I think is reviews. Like if you get something early, it's just you playing it. And like, I miss everybody getting something at launch and we're all talking about it. And like, I miss that. I feel like that's the one thing that is not that great.
I remember when Sekiro came out and it was a case of like, I played it early and I played with down in London with you. Mm-hmm. And then we'd obviously had the review copy sent in early as well. And I was like hammering through that. And I just came in and I was just like, I want to be able to talk about it with friends. Yeah. But every single person here does not want to hear me talk about it because they want to experience it for themselves.
That happens every time. The more story driven, the more you can't say.
Yeah, and it really sucked because I remember for like the week afterwards, we were at the lunch tables and like everyone was just like, oh, I've got to this bit here. And in my mind, I'm like, oh, you just wait, buddy. You just wait. And I'm just like, and they're like, oh, did you enjoy that bit, Jules? And I'm like, in retrospect, I can't say what I know. Right, so I had to just be like, yes, at that time, I enjoyed that bit.
It's just, they're trying to, and obviously it's not some like, oh, woe is us 1% thing. But if anything, I want to tell people who don't review games, hey, look, by the way, you're actually mostly fine because like, unless you love the idea of the exclusivity side of it and getting something like, just as a thing, you can totally just play it at launch with all your friends.
I tell you what, another one of these 1%er bitch and moan sessions. It's like, I love it when we get to go to these behind the scenes events and get to play these games early, see these sort of trailers and vertical slice gameplays. That is fantastic because being able to board the hype train first is sometimes the best feeling.
Yeah.
But I am getting very sick of the technical jargon that we see recycled in every single one. It's like, it won't have loot boxes. It does have loot boxes.
Yeah,
it's like, this one here is like, using a brand new game engine, it's recycled assets from
the
previous game.
You can play
your
way, which just
means it's like you are in complete control. It's like, you'll be logging in every day as a games of service.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. And you start noticing those patterns as well, and you start realizing the marketing spiel. You start realizing the formulaic aspect of stuff. There was something that I looked at. I think I can't even think what it's called. Ultra Age, I think it's called. Okay. And it looks solid enough, but I sort of looked at it and went, okay, that's a platinum style action game with like, you know, this loot system or this weapon system. I've seen these things before, and it starts making you siphon stuff off as not just getting as generally excited because you are studying the medium, you are studying the industry, and you're studying those mechanics. So yeah, there's pros and cons to both sides, but you're not as fully missing out on stuff as you might think you are. I think that there's absolutely a ton of positives to just enjoying the industry from afar.
And there's also a thing as well, is that as much benefits as we will definitely spout about working on the inner circle, as it were, you do still get treated like an absolute mug by some publishers, man. Like there are times where we can't even get codes because the publisher just doesn't like us. There's other times where like they just won't respond. Or the best case, I mean, I must have told this story before about us trying to get code of Hired Gun, the Necromunda game. They wrote to you and it was like, you wrote back, they were like, are you interested in the code for this game? And you're like, yes, I'm interested in the code for this game. And they just didn't respond to you.
I'm sure you tweeted
something.
Emails.
Yeah. They sent you more emails saying, are you interested? It's like, yes, I am. What do I need to do?
They don't need to like fly a biplane over the developer's like building or something. Yeah, I mean, we've never had anyone say that they didn't like us. We've just had people not respond to stuff. And it's just
2K
well,
don't like us. 2K do not like us, man. Yeah, we had a struggle getting the whole
WWE was that
games.
The whole thing. Yeah, there's been, I guess there's been instances in the past. Last question from Travis Webb. What game announcement would blow your mind?
Oh, man.
Blow your mind, Jules Gill.
Well, recently what blew my mind was that No More Heroes 3 just dropping out of like seemingly nowhere, even though it technically was announced and everyone was aware of it. Apparently
it
I was
arrived.
What would be really exciting for me is if a game like, because obviously, did you see that Skate was getting like a bit of a remake? And
oh yeah, totally.
Yeah, so like everything's like that. All of my games of the past are coming back. Mm. If they could ever see it in their heart to reannounce that SSX was coming back in summer, that would be absolutely spectacular. I would enjoy that.
Why is there not? Because my go-to is I want a collection. I want an HD collection. I want a Max Payne trilogy. I feel like I mention that every other week. I want a Max Payne trilogy, 4K 60 thing. And I want Def Jam. I want Def Jam Fight for New York. I just want that. I don't need it to be overhauled or anything. That game is beautiful. I play it on PSP because I have to. I can't play it anywhere else. And so I love that game, but I just want that. Just put it on the new system and make it 4K 60. I'm buying Ready to Rumble, Boxing Rumble, Punchy Time, Creed Champions, Rocky Dennis, because I want to play that, because I just need to scratch the arcade punching itch. And there's not... Where's Def Jam? Where did it go? I don't know.
Ladies and gents, you can't see how pained he is. Where His expression it went. Is just so I like, just please, don't... just get...
I don't know. We can get ABBA in 2021, but we can't get Def Jam. Like, what are we doing?
If Microsoft ever just came up and just said, listen, we're actually going to release a new Rare game, that would be fantastic. Because I know we got Imperfect Dark at some point in the future, but it'd be great if they could bring back something else. Like, there's tons of video game announcements. Like, in terms of, like, trying to narrow down his question into, do we want, like, a remaster or a remake or a brand new game or a continuation in a franchise? There's so many to choose from.
Metal Gear. Give me a new... Like that
it
level.
Won't
of,
happen. It won't
no, I know,
happen.
I know. That's the thing. I blow my mind. I just give me Kojima with a new IP that isn't Death Stranding, but is the West, the East meets West ideology of Metal Gear, because there's been nothing like that since.
Yeah, I remember that one game that was what was it called?
The one that the art director did.
Something Survive, was it called?
That's
gonna annoy me. That's gonna annoy me.
Yoji Shinkawa, the art director, and he did, it wasn't Lost Judgment. No, that's a completely different game.
Last Survivor or something like that. It was something
whatever
it was.
That game is, it was very
Metal Gear. It just stole the art style and the fact that there was Metal Gears in it, and then it was just an utter cack game.
And we are actually gonna end on one very quick question. Go with your gut for this question. So this is from Jared Liebigen, who says, which game do you like more? Super Metroid
It's not a game I've heard of before.
Which game do you like more, Super Metroid or Castlevania Symphony of the Night?
Castlevania Symphony of the Night, my Super dude. Metroid. Oh, really?
Yeah. I think Castlevania Symphony of the Night, and it's not to say that one tiny thing breaks the whole game, but I hate how much you get knocked back when you get hit in that game. But I just want to play it. I don't want to get knocked back across the level.
I think it was because it was my first sort of like Castlevania experience because I got it for the PlayStation 1, and I was just like, oh me meow, this is a good ass game. I love the graphical style. I love the way that it had map exploration. So you go and get new stats and new items
game.
And then go back through the castle. I just found myself just being so immersed in it, wanting to explore every single room in that. And a Castlevania title hasn't, not even Bloodstained Ritual of the Night, really captured my interest as much as that did. That to me was like the peak Castlevania. A lot of people probably would say that there's some that came out for the Game Boy Advance that were apparently amazing. I haven't had a chance to play them.
There's the one that they're bringing back for the HD re-releasey thing.
Yeah.
Which is set in like modern Japan or something, but it's all anime style.
That's
Dude's got
weird,
a white coat
one.
On. I like the idea of them being that risky with it. I know it's an older game, but I like the idea of bringing that to a wider audience. Man, just be Super Metroid. I absolutely love Samus. Can't wait for Metroid Dread. But overall, I love a good Metroid, and Super Metroid is like just a perfect engine of a game. But yes, for now, this has been the Untitled Banter podcast. Check our Twitters next week on a Thursday afternoon. We'll put out another tweet, ask for different questions, different thoughts, different whatever things you'd like us to talk about. But for now, this has been the Untitled Banter podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tailford, joined by Jules Gill.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you all very much for listening to us, and we will catch you all next week. Bye-bye. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.